first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. I always say that, but if you're listening live, it's 1 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Mountain, 10 a.m. Pacific time, and it's always a good time to spout off. Welcome to a brand new week to anxiety, shall we say. We hope there isn't a panic because in financial markets, what you fear seems to come to pass. I'm not a financial expert, but I do think it's important not to panic because then you actually make happen what you're afraid of. Or as my dear old dad used to say, what you resist persists. But that was kind of an esoteric way of looking at it. Welcome once again. We are in the middle of March, the Ides of March, headed towards St. Paddy's Day, if you celebrate that. And as usual, lots going on. If you have some thoughts either about the banks and what's happening there, and don't get me wrong, I am concerned because of who is the symbol of the supposed head of the free world, or the formerly free world, the guy that I call the presidential potted plant. It's so insulting to all of us to pass this guy off as somebody who is actually making decisions, isn't it? Doesn't that make you a little bit nervous? Anybody who isn't nervous is simply not paying attention. If you'd like to comment on that or anything else, our number here is 603-816-1590. You are always welcome to participate. We love it. And I do get mail. And I don't always read them online, but I do get mail at my website, KarenCataline.com. You can write me at Karen@KarenCataline.com. And I used to have a great sense of humor about all the stuff regarding Karens. And then I got to thinking about the collectivism and the conformity and the messages of that, of disliking people. Mockery is okay. I mean, satire. We all need to laugh at ourselves, but it's not that. It's the subliminal message that if you are a white, middle-aged woman who complains a lot, which I cop to, that that everybody with a certain name is that way. It's kind of as a stab at individuality. And I, as you may know, like to write a lot about the attack on individuality, because after all, this march to Marxism that we are watching every day, day in, day out, is truly an attack on the whole notion of not only individuality, but individual freedom and personal responsibility. Those are the things that have always been, have been one of the bywords for my life, and I'm hoping it used to be yours. In fact, the radical left that marches in goose step today, they used to be the leaders in supposed individuality and doing your own thing and not conforming, even though the hippies of the 60s, late 60s, they screamed about conformity and then they all dressed and acted and behaved and spoke alike. That's what was kind of interesting about that. But now, have you watched the way all the most deeply held beliefs and thoughts of the hippie 60s and the lefties and the sex, drug, rock, drugs, rock and roll, have all of those people who held to those basic ideas have flipped on a dime. Their betters told them that it was much better to hate the people that disagree with you and to believe that there's only one way of thinking, acting, and believing. And if you don't believe like I do, you're evil, terrible, a racist, a homophobe. Now, the fact that they all jumped on that bandwagon seemingly simultaneously is something I always wondered if they'd do, and sure enough, they did. There are lists and lists, I've posted them on my website from time to time, about the major flips that leftists have made just in the last couple of years, really. There were certain things that Democrats agreed on that really all Americans agreed on. And then the radical left got hold of the Democrat Party by the throat, I might say. And a lot of people jumped right on that bandwagon with both feet. And what we had was people who used to say, don't litter and keep America beautiful, now extol the virtues of pooping on the street and living in tents and trashing your city. And that is but one example of the amount of flip-flops that we've seen from, have you noticed how Me Too has gone out of fashion? That's because the people, the proponents who got on that bandwagon were smeared and hated for not wanting men to compete with women and take away their dreams to be world-class athletes or to win in the Olympics. So if you don't keep going along with the insanity more and more, eventually they're going to eat you too. But there are people who actually see that something isn't right, that they've been led down a primrose path to insanity. They've gone from women's sports, Title IX, rah, 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 to you'd better allow men in women's sports as long as they claim that they identify as a woman, and then you can have men completely rob women of all their athletic dreams. And that is but one example. There are people who have stood up against this insanity and said, you know what, this is a bridge too far. I'm not going there. I don't want to go there. And they have apologized. So what I want to talk about briefly are apologies. There are people who would rather die than apologize for anything. They have to be right all the time. And if they're accused, or if someone, as the left likes to call it, calls them out, they defend themselves vociferously. They say, well, it's your fault. It's your problem. You're the one that made me do it. I didn't do anything. It's your problem. Have you known people like that? I think we've all known people like that. The radical left today refuses to apologize, but those people who are getting off the bandwagon, and there are still precious few of them, are stellar in the fact that they have or have decided to apologize. And here's one right now. Let me tell you of it. On Substack, it says that there is the first ever, we think, official apology for the COVID vaccine mandates. That's a big thing. It's a big, big thing. It came out of Canada in a moving video, and I urge you to watch it. I don't know if I can post it on my website because there are copyright issues and then people come after you. So I'm going to have to do the research on that. In West Nipissing, Ontario, Canada, look her up. Anne Tessier. Anne, A-N-N-E, Tessier, T-S-S-I-E-R, maybe in Canada it's pronounced Tessier. She acknowledges that the mandates were wrong. She admits that they were wrong when enacted and that the city council was aware of that. That's huge. And here is, in part, her apology. The reason this is so important, ladies and gentlemen, and there's another stellar apology that I just want to cite quickly, is because Anne deserves a medal for having apologized, for saying, you know what, I thought this, and now I see that I was wrong. Boy, don't you wish the our so-called betters would do that, but they never will, because they have to keep pushing those jabs, push them, which is deeply suspect, given that they don't want to talk about the dangers, the damage, the harm that is being done. So she says, in part, I want to acknowledge that this policy has caused a lot of unnecessary harm and animosity within our workforce. In bold, I believe that this policy was mistakenly adopted 12 months ago. And this is to do with the vax mandate, in particular in Canada. Have you seen it in the United States anywhere? Have you seen the died suddenly videos? And guess what? We can disagree about what we think might be happening there, because the truth is we do not have all the facts yet. But in recent years, if there was even a suspicion that something on the market, like bad cheese or Ebola in your meat, germs in the lettuce, they recall lettuce, but they won't recall that jab. Why? And in some areas, they're still pushing it. In many areas, they're still advertising it. Martha Stewart, there's still an advertisement. Get vaxxed, get boosted. Oh, it's so important. It's as if they're tone deaf. Why? Because they are. She goes on to say, a constituent had presented to the council the Public Health Ontario data showing that by January 2022, more cases were reported per capita in vaccinated people versus unvaccinated people. And yet the governments, both Canada and all across the formerly free world, pushed it anyway, coerced it anyway, bullied people anyway, and robbed them of their livelihoods for taking it. Thank you for your apology, Ann Kessler. We'll talk more about this in the week to come. We got to take a break. We'll be back with a great guest after this. Don't go away.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
The Reading Foundation provides evaluation and tutorial programs based upon the Orton-Gillingham philosophy of learning, based upon the study of language, how children acquire language, and the mechanisms involved in learning. All the learning pathways of the brain, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile, are addressed and strengthened to build a strong foundation for the acquisition of reading skills. If you are interested in learning more, please contact the Reading Foundation for more information. The Reading Foundation is at 10 Northern Boulevard, Unit 19, Amherst, New Hampshire, 03031. Or you can email us at readingfoundation_rf@yahoo.com. And of course, you can call anytime at 603-882-0992. The Reading Foundation, Amherst, New Hampshire.
Karen Cataline got her parents to name her Karen before she was born, so she could grow up to be a punchline. Now here's more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off, brand new week. I'm raring to go. I wonder where that term bright-eyed and bushy-tailed came from. Anyway, we have a very special guest calling us or speaking to us from overseas in Germany. His name is Rainer Zittelmann, and here's a little about him. He examines the 10 most common objections to capitalism in his new book, which is called In Defense of Capitalism. Isn't it too bad that we have to defend capitalism in America, of all places? I'm looking for his bio here, and forgive me, I thought I had it. Capitalism, its critics say, prioritize profits over humanity, creates dominant monopolies, and undermines democracy. And Zittelmann scrutinizes each of those arguments in his new book. We're going to let him tell us more. Mr. Zittelmann, thank you for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for calling us here in America. We're suffering from some of the ills that we thought we'd never have to suffer, and here we are. Tell us, why don't you give us first an overview, if you would, of your book, In Defense of Capitalism.
Yes, of course. First of all, I didn't write the book to convince anti-capitalists, because I'm very sure they won't buy the book, they won't read the book. They would prefer the new book from Bernie Sanders, Why Capitalism is Evil. So I wrote the book for people who are pro-capitalism, and I think there are a lot in the United States today, but to give them all the facts, all the arguments, so that you can win every discussion about capitalism with anti-capitalists. So whether they tell you, one example, they tell you capitalism is to blame for hunger and poverty. Wrong. Fact is, 200 years ago, before capitalism, 90% of the worldwide population lived in extreme poverty. 90%. Today, it's less than 10%. And half of this reduction happened over the last decades. The problem is that students don't learn it at school, that teachers and professors tell them a lot about the evils of capitalism, but they don't tell them anything about socialism and the evils of socialism. And even if you look in the United States, 2 weeks ago, the new Index of Economic Freedom by the Heritage Foundation was published. This is published every year, ranking how economically free are countries all over the world. And now the shocking news for the United States. United States have the worst ranking since they started with the index in 1995. And today, 16 European countries are more economically free than the United States. And
wow.
I can tell you something. We are not economically free in Europe. We have a lot of problems. But if even 16 European countries are more economically free or more capitalist than the United States, according to this index from the Heritage Foundation, you see, something is totally wrong in the United States. And so I'm very happy to publish this book. It is published in 30 languages, but it's most important for me, of course, is in the United States.
Yes. Could you name a few of those countries? I'm curious. I bet you our listeners are too.
Yes. It's of course, it was in Germany. Now I'm in Athens at this moment and have everyday interviews. It's published in Czech Republic. It will be published in Korea. It will be published in Poland. It will be published in Spain, in Italy,
forgive me,
in the Netherlands.
What I meant was the 16 countries that are freer right now than the United States.
Oh, this was your question. Let me check. Yes.
Yes.
For example, I give you one example. Sweden. Sweden, Bernie Sanders will tell us Sweden is a socialist country. Wrong. Sweden is today number 10 on the list in the index of economic freedom. Number 10, and United States is number 25. Even Austria, according to this index, is more economically free than the United States. I'm a big fan of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I remember he said in his movie, he came to the United States because this is a capitalist country. He wanted to go away from socialist Austria. And today, hopefully, he doesn't think about going back to Austria, because today even Austria is more economically free than the United States.
So let me stop you for just a moment. Can I just throw something in? Because of
sure.
the hysteria to do with the virus that robbed people of their liberty, their freedom, not just economically, but in speech and action and mobility and everything, the, in my opinion, despicable Arnold Schwarzenegger screamed in tweets and elsewhere, "Heck with your freedom. Liberty doesn't mean anything. You have to get vaxxed. You have to wear a mask." So this lie that was perpetrated on the public using a 99.86% non-lethal virus completely switched over somebody who paid lip service to capitalism like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Are you aware of that, just out of curiosity?
Yes, I like his movies and I like his political opinions. Some decades ago, today, of course, he thinks in a lot of things a little bit different, even about climate change and this stuff. But let's come back to why is it so important to defend capitalism. I remember the beginning, the 80s and the 90s. These were a big, a great time. You had Ronald Reagan, for me, the best president ever in the United States. Then there was Maggie Thatcher in the UK with capitalist reforms. Even Deng Xiaoping in China had some good pro-market reforms, introduced private property. Even in Sweden, they had pro-market reforms. But this is now 30 years ago. At this time, everyone understood that socialism doesn't work. Socialism collapsed. And now people forget it. And teachers don't tell them at school. I give you one example. I think you have heard about the biggest socialist experiment in history, Mao's so-called Great Leap Forward. This happened in the end of the 50s. 45 million people in China died. 45 million people. And when I have my lectures all over the world, I ask people everywhere, have you heard about this at school? And whether I speak in Asia, in Latin America, in the United States, or Europe, only very few people raise their hands. Whether I speak to 30 people, 300 or 3,000, they haven't heard about this at school. And so I think it's necessary to write books like this to defend capitalism, because there are so many things that they tell that are wrong. In my book, you find 900 footnotes. It's written in a very easy way. But you have 900 footnotes. I used 360 different books and scientific papers, and I refute step by step, chapter by chapter, all their crazy arguments from these anti-capitalists.
Right. Rainer, I admire your passion. I think it's wonderful. I wanted to just mention, when socialists don't teach the benefits to capitalism, it's not surprising, right? We have the Marxists have taken over the educational system, both K-12 and university education in America, let alone elsewhere. And of course they're going to bash capitalism and tell you and lie, which leads me to an interesting question I was thinking when I was listening to you. Is it fair to say that socialists have to promote what they want to do by lying to the people, that it will do things it will not do, by appealing to their utopian instincts, that if you just put us in charge, everybody will have enough to eat, everybody will be, there will be a chicken in every pot, and that is an evil lie. Whereas capitalists don't lie. They say no system is perfect, but the impersonalness of the market is much more fair and creates more prosperity than socialist ever did or ever will. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And there is not one single example of a socialist system where people lived better in the end. And this is what, for example, Bernie Sanders wants. I read his latest book. It was published 3 weeks ago. And he has one chapter: we should abolish all billionaires in the United States. There should be not a single billionaire in the United States. But do you know what it means? In every country, in every developed country, you have some billionaires. Even in Sweden, the percentage of billionaires adjusted to population is 60% higher as in the United States. So if Bernie Sanders tells us there should be not a single billionaire in the United States, what does it mean? The only countries I know where not a single billionaire is North Korea, is Cuba, and some very poor affluent countries. I think Bernie Sanders should know this if he writes he want to abolish every single billionaire in the United States. I think the United States should be proud to have people, amazing entrepreneurs, who made not only a lot of money for themselves, but also who helped people a lot with their products all over the world. I think America should be proud to have people that, like this, and not someone who said we should abolish all billionaires as it is in North Korea or Cuba.
But Rainer, to make things even more complicated and confusing today, what is so head-scratching, Rainer, and I wonder what you think about this, is that the great majority of billionaires and the wealthiest people, both in America and in the world, happen to be socialists and Marxists and authoritarians, such as the case with the World Economic Forum that has the wealthiest people in the world telling the rest of us, you will own nothing, but you will be happy. And my answer to that is, you first. So that's a very strange paradox, isn't it?
To be honest, I don't believe this. This is the media. The media, they always quote people like George Soros, for example, and I know all these people. There are some billionaires, but it's a minority.
Wait, no, you know George Soros?
I know what he says. Yes, and of course, these are only a few people. The most of the billionaires, the problem is that they are silent, that they are silent. This is a big problem. I don't think that the majority is against entrepreneurship and against capitalism. But the media, the mainstream media, they only quote this minority of billionaires.
This is a fine argument.
We want to have higher taxes.
Wait. This is a fine argument, but it's worth making, and I know we only have a little bit of time. We do not disagree. I love the free market. I don't resent billionaires and millionaires. What I resent are the wealthy, who I don't resent their wealth, deciding that they're going to close the barn door behind them and start dictating to the rest of us how to live with their high-tech demands. And they're basically authoritarians. And they're imposing their authoritarianism using their wealth to do it. It's like the hypocrisy of Hollywood, where actors are Marxists, but they made their wealth with capitalism, right?
Yes. Further, we have some others, for example, John McKay, you know, the Whole Foods founder. He wrote about my book. He said very positive remarks, as did Steve Forbes about my book. So there are some people who are pro-capitalism, but the problem is that usually they don't speak up, so and media don't quote them, but only this minority of crazy people who say, who are very rich, and they say, we want to pay higher taxes. So if I say, if you have the feeling that you don't pay enough taxes, you are free to transfer something to the financial authority.
No, they only want
you,
other
you
people to pay more taxes. They never
only want other people to do it. That's
yeah.
the problem. They don't
That's
want
true.
It for themselves.
So you, what you've got is authoritarian Marxism wrapped in the idea that the wealthy should rule. And that's not free market. That's not true capitalism. A true capitalist, I would ask you, is one who wants other people to do well too, who doesn't resent other people's success. Am I right?
Sure, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Tell everybody how they can find your book. And you have the last word. I'm sorry you got me going, but please, you take the last word. And we wish you great luck with your book. Go ahead.
Yes. The title, again, is In Defense of Capitalism. You can order it Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you want. You can order it online. Please give it to your friends, not to your anti-capitalist friends. They will not read it. Give it to your friends who are pro-market economy, that they have all the facts. There's, I can guarantee there's not a single book all over the world with so many facts for capitalism, and you will win every discussion with anti-capitalists. And I think we have to have this fight every day and every day to discuss if we meet something who says capitalism is evil. And they know you are wrong, and now
right.
I tell you why, and you find it.
Rainer Zittelmann, thank you so much for joining us all the way from overseas. Best of luck to you and best of luck with your book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Well, we have another great guest. We got to run. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read The Difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Outdoor Almanac, brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
Looking for the antlers that deer shed every year has become a popular pastime. Deer start dropping antlers in January, but for some, the process may take until February or March. In the spring, the antlers grow back again. According to deer experts, the loss of antlers causes the buck no pain. It's been likened to leaves just falling off a tree. So where do you begin to look for sheds? Unfortunately, there's no easy answer. Usually, deer yard up in protected areas like hemlock stands to keep the snow and cold away. But so far this winter, the deer have moved around pretty much wherever they want because of the lack of snow. So if it were me, I'd try fresh trails or fences that they may have jumped. And if you don't find any, well, you had a nice walk. And come spring, the mice and squirrels will find the sheds and chew on them to get their calcium fix. So if you look at it that way, shed hunting is a win-win.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. Eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, and our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fat Lash Food Police in the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fat Lash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back. Sounds like disco is back again. Did you watch the Oscars? You know, there was a time, once upon a time, when I was in the theater doing musical comedy that I never missed the Oscars. Now I never miss an opportunity not to watch a single minute. They are so outrageous, so appalling. And yes, we have a right to be offended because you can watch them or not watch them. But having a bunch of radical leftists, billionaire Marxists, well, millionaires, congratulating themselves and lecturing the rest of us is something I'd rather have root canal surgery. I have said for the longest time, very, very important to have people who are actually normal be making films. And we are delighted to have with us Hawk Jensen, who is just such a person. He likes to tackle controversial documentary topics. He's won awards for his docuseries, The Witness Project, which ran from 2015 until 2021. And he won a grant to create a podcast. He has done a great deal, and I don't want to keep going. We won't have time to talk to him. Hawk Jensen began screenwriting full-time in 2006 and has worked on major brands like Warner Brothers and ABC. And he founded his own media company, Smock Media. He has a new Netflix caliber 5-series documentary called Are You Ready? Follow the Science. It's all about COVID and the lockdowns. And he tells the truth, apparently. Hawk Jensen, finally, I've gotten to you. Welcome to Spouting Off. Good to have you on the line.
Hi, Karen. Yeah, thanks for having me on again. Really nice to hear your voice.
It is great to have you. Talk about this new film that you have, what we might see in it, and then, of course, we'll make sure everybody knows how to watch it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so, you know, we're sailing right into the controversy. It's called Follow the Science, the name of the series. And we're actually starting off with a pilot episode. So it's a 5-episode series. It's 100% grassroots donor funded series. And it starts off with a pilot episode. Episode 1 is called Lockdowns Go Viral. And this episode really looks at basically January 2020 to October 2020. And I'm directing it, and my colleagues and I produced it, the Soundmind Creative Group, which is an anonymous film group who wish to continue to work in the Hollywood scene, but don't want to be canceled by the people you were describing at the top of the show there in terms of the Oscars. And we're really looking at it's a comprehensive look back of what went right, what went wrong during COVID. And we feel it's a requisite viewing for anyone who cares about the community, because we have two major aspects of it, two anchors. It's data and human consequences. We want to look at the real numbers of how effective the lockdowns were, as well as the enormous costs of these policies that went around the globe. I mean, everyone you've ever met and everywhere you've ever been also had to deal with the lockdowns. It's the first true worldwide experience. And it's been very humbling, because we're 100% donor funded. We crowdfunded, and we've been working on it for 2 years now. And it's just been a really illuminating experience. And I'll just quickly add that we have a great host named Clifton Duncan, very charming, very charismatic. But we also have an amazing scientist named Jay Bhattacharya, who is the backbone of our scientific storyline. And he's backed up by Dr. David Katz, who is a chronic disease specialist. So we have a really amazing triumvirate of talent and insight to really give our listeners and an audience the look at the lockdowns they deserve, that they feel has not materialized in the mainstream media.
Well, they had a vested interest in those lockdowns, as well as everything else that followed. So the first episode is just lockdowns, or do you go you're going to go into the mask mandates and the jab mandates. Tell us how that's all going to shake out in this series.
Yeah, well, we realized it was such a, we originally started off with a feature film idea, and then we realized that it was such a huge project. So much happened so quickly, and there was never an opportunity to look back at the discrete moments. I mean, the few weeks where toilet paper was the most important thing, and then ventilators and all these things that were the most important thing for about 5 weeks, and then you would never get to hear about it again. So we went back, and we're looking at the first 8 months, and it takes us through what's known as the Great Barrington Declaration. If your audience is familiar with that,
tell everybody what that is real quick. Yes,
sure. Very important. That was a declaration. It's just a statement put out by Jay Bhattacharya and his colleagues. Basically saying, we believe we're on the wrong policy, that lockdowns are the wrong policy, that focused protection, basically harm minimization and focused protection on the elderly and those with chronic conditions would be the best policy moving forward in terms of how do we deal with the lockdowns and then let society breathe and continue on and adjust, and as opposed to these blanket lockdowns. It was an attempt to ring an alarm bell and say, hey, maybe we went down the wrong path here, and maybe our public health policy leaders should rethink this. And that then turned into basically a propaganda campaign or attack, really, on Jay Bhattacharya and his colleagues against the Great Barrington Declaration, because it pushed against their narrative. And they needed to maintain some sort of semblance of a illusion of consensus. And the Great Barrington Declaration had tens of thousands of doctors and epidemiologists and all sorts of respiratory and infectious disease scientists sign on. And it shows that there was not. So it's just, and it really, what it reveals is that there's this whole thing of Science Inc., like the corrupted sort of science on high as an institution versus the actual profession of science and the pursuit of truth. And so that's what we really show in this first, amongst other things, that we show that there is this separation from what we would call the science pursuit of truth, which is what every good scientist worth their salt is pursuing, versus what these sort of bureaucratic scientists have turned science into, this sort of I am the science type rhetoric. And so we dismantle that. We walk people through that whilst tracking sort of the week to week experience of 2 weeks to flatten the curve into not overwhelming hospitals, which then there was a mission drift into zero COVID.
And there was no overwhelming of hospitals. There never
was. Exactly. And yet that was sort of the feel good. Like, I would equate it to when, you know, back in 9/11, when there was that moment where all of America was rolling up their sleeves to give blood the day after 9/11 occurred, because people thought, well, what can we do? I felt there was that same sort of camaraderie, that American spirit that was being tapped into. Like, oh, okay, we need 2 weeks to give the hospitals their time. And then it just kept going.
But it was a lie, though, wasn't it?
I mean, it was.
It was a lie. It was a giant lie. And then I wonder, let me just see if I can give you a chance to answer this, because it's a little bit intricate. And that is, I find that there are people, if you look at just the people who at least will admit that it was wrong what was done. It's divided between people who think it was incompetence and people who believe that it was all done on purpose and used as a tool to instigate greater control and, frankly, socialism in our lives. And that what they said it was all for was merely a narrative to get people to comply and obey. Do you cover that? And how do you cover that in a film when so many people, even on the side of believing it was wrong, is it necessary? I mean, I think it is key, but I don't know how you persuade people of that.
Sure. Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, it was a giant exercise in manipulation and compliance in terms of trying to evoke a new level of compliance within the general population. I totally agree with you. There was an opportunity that was seized upon by those who I think have nefarious intent. I don't disagree about that. But a lot of Americans didn't know necessarily what to make of this. So we really dive into what it is to pursue truth, what it is to realize when things are not correct, and how to redirect your efforts. Also, the idea of when and how to admit you're wrong. That's very difficult for people.
Huge.
And as well as, you know, admitting you're wrong and then adjusting the way you see the world. So we have a storyline. A woman named Jen Reisman is a storyline. She's interviewed by a YouTuber, one of our co-hosts named Sydney Watson. And they have this wonderful discussion. She was a true blue believer, sort of COVID police, mass police type woman. I mean, just in terms of being in the moment, because she was a healthcare worker and this is what she needed to do. And I mean, and in saying that about her, she absolutely, you know, she was doing the right thing to the fullest of her knowledge at the time. But then she herself noticed that what she was being told versus the experience she had, she worked with children. She saw the children were suffering so unduly as to be far worse than anything she feared. So she watched that. She awakened within that, this is not what I'm being told to do. And she lived like that for a year. And so now, we watch her kind of come out, walk us through her reevaluation and her awakening into, maybe things weren't as they seemed.
So great.
And we want that for our audience and for everyday Americans to see, like, this is what it looks like to change your mind, to open your mind, to consider
can
that
we bottle
not all
it?
Is what it seems.
Can we bottle it? During that time, there was something going around from, I guess it was Mark Twain, that said people would rather be lied to than to admit they were wrong.
Sure. I would say people are willing to they'd rather die than ever admit they're wrong. I mean, people just want to go to their grave knowing that they never have to admit they're wrong. And I think that's it's an unfortunate way of seeing the world, because I think growth and, you know, you're not doing life right unless you're falling on your face every day and learning. I mean, that's what learning is, and that's what experience is. And that's the joy of life. And that's why you have experiences. That's why you take risks and go outside and do things and live an enriched life. And there's, for some reason, these last few years, people just sort of rolled over on that risk taking, and sort of a grand neuroses took over. And I feel like
we're a mass psychosis.
We're emerging from it.
And paradoxically, Hawk, what the COVID hoax was designed to do is to root out that very notion of making mistakes, of having dissent, of discussing and debating, of there not being one right way for everything. And individuality itself was under attack. So you ask, you know, what you are at the heart doing is to extol the virtues of exactly what they wanted to put down and eradicate, individuality of thought. I love your work. I love it. I am so jazzed about it. Tell everybody how they can watch this film and even support you in making sure that the rest of them get made, because the propaganda media is going to do everything they can to stop you from telling the truth, or at least telling this side of the story.
Sure, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Hollywood won't be making this series. And so we've relied 100% on grassroots donors like your audience to create what we've made so far. We've actually we've raised $400,000 so far, and we're raising another $150,000 to complete this pilot. And we are at followthescienceseries.com. That's followthescienceseries.com. And in fact, tomorrow night, we are having a sneak peek preview, sort of a test screening for all of our donors of our work print. And for a $20 donation, people can watch the film in its current iteration and give feedback to help sculpt it. And then on April 19th, we're actually premiering it in Orlando, Florida, with Tom Woods hosting. He was our angel investor that got this whole thing started. And so we're excited to have the big 4K extravaganza in Orlando, and we'll be releasing it shortly after that. But all of this has been donor funded, and this first episode is really, shall we say, our crowdfunding video. We want to put it out there, reach as many people as we can, share it as many people as can, and ideally, we're actually raising $6 million to the additional four episodes. So we sort of did the pilot for half price, if you will, and you'll see it's high production value. I mean, this is intended to be on a Hulu, on a Netflix, even in the theater. It's intended to be rewatchable by all ages. And we hope that people see it, enjoy it, and it evokes the conversation that we need. Every family, every group, everything got split right down the middle. And this show helps give people the scientific literacy and insight to have the conversations that were never had.
And which certain parties don't want us to have. Will your series cover somebody else did a series, I don't know who did it, died suddenly about the vaxes? Will it cover that?
Well, yeah, we intend to get the vaccines by episode three. So episode two, we're going to look at the origin of the vaccine. We're going to look very specifically at the science of masks. And that, I mean, there's so much that happened. We sort of want to, because right now the current thing is like, okay, you know, you want to, when you look back in history, you want to look through the filter of the immediate history. But we've dissected it. So we'll get into that period between when lockdowns seemed to be, there was the first abatement of lockdowns, so sort of a return. But before vaccines, there was a time period there. So as the second episode, we'll look at that and the development of vaccines. Then the third episode, we'll get into the rollout of vaccines and the process of mandates and whatnot.
You hear that music. We do have to run.
Sure, sure.
You know, Godspeed to you. I am so glad. Even if I disagreed with you, and I don't, this point of view has to get out. Hawk Jensen.
We really appreciate it, yeah.
FollowTheScienceSeries.com. Get involved, donate, and help him make the rest of this series. Hawk Jensen, thank you for joining
us. Thank you.
That does it for this edition. We'll be back on Thursday and Friday of this week at 1 p.m. So keep on us, spouting off.